Hey, it's Mark here. And before we begin today's very special episode, I wanted to give you a reminder that you can still access the Mini Expert Series over on www.miniexpertseries.com and get an insight into some really practical tips on how to put yourself and your message out there, from hearing how to pitch a contributor at Forbes.com to landing a TEDx talk to being featured in some of your favorite publications and being more honest and sharing your story online, and many, many, many more, how to grow your Instagram and LinkedIn followers and so forth. It's all for a good cause. Over the next week or so, the funds are still going to the Crisis Fund for Children in Ukraine. So head over to www.miniexpertseries.com, and I can't wait to hear how that has helped your impact go far in life. Hi, and welcome to the Unconventionalist Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Roost, and this is the show about what it's really like to turn your message into a movement. I've got a very special guest today, my good friend, Tony Riddle, who's been on the show twice already. I'll put the links of the previous episodes in the show note. But his brand new book is out, Be More Human: How to Transform Your Lifestyle for Optimum Health, Happiness, and Vitality. It's an unbelievable conversation, really, really excited about it. We're going to talk about the whole process of how Tony started his book, how he got actually blocked in the very early days and denied an opportunity because he didn't have any followers, what it took for him to go from 2,000 followers to 72,000 followers, how his incredible journey to get this book out has a huge mission behind it and a message that hopefully will impact a lot of us, but more importantly, how this book can help you reconnect to your biological norm and implement some little tricks and tips on just living more naturally, right? Whether that's spending a little bit more time outside, squatting, breathing, playing, all that good stuff. It's jam-packed with just some amazing experiences. And we talk about the book and more. So tune in, get your pens out, get your notes out. And as always, if you enjoyed this conversation, please let me know in the comments below. Share this conversation with someone who needs to hear it to feel inspired. And please do leave a rating and review over on Apple Podcast. It really does help to spread the word and increase visibility on the show. So I appreciate you as always. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, I give you the one and only Tony Riddle. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, I give you the one and only Tony Riddle. Tony, good to see you, brother.
Hey, man, I'm just trying to make my head the same size of yours. Again, just is that even possible?
Some people listening. There's a video version of this conversation with Tony. We're just trying to find the dress. But you know what? It's all good because we're not here to talk about our heads or the size of it. But I'm so, so excited. I've been looking forward to this conversation. This is the third time you've come on the podcast. I actually think that you're one of the rare. I think there's only you and David Baker, I believe, who's come back that many times on the podcast. So a fan favorite. Tony, appreciate you for making the time, for being here today, especially that we are right in the middle of your book launch week, which is super exciting. And for those who are watching this on YouTube, I am holding a copy of the book. Be More Human.
Be More Human. How to Transform Your Lifestyle for Optimum Health, Happiness, and Vitality. I was reading this out loud yesterday around sleep studies. For this, I'm running competition launches. It's drawn today, I thought, right, I'm going to read this. I said, I'm going to read this now. I'm sitting comfortably. I'm just going to read this from my book, Be More Human, read to you, of course, by Tony Riddle. You know, it's just, and that itself is an experience, like the audio book. You know, I sat in a recording studio. We're straight in, by the way, Mark. We're just going right. I was in a
This is it. This is
recording studio.
We wouldn't have it any other way.
For 2 days solid. And that's coming from someone that was late to reading, right? Late to speaking, to the point my parents took me to see a specialist. He's not talking. And, you know, and stuff unraveled out of that over time to where I am now, I guess, and even in the book. But to sit there then suddenly reading out loud, and it's intense, man. It's like from 9 a.m. until people that don't know about recording audiobooks. This is great.
I'm gonna have to go through that. So this is really interesting for me because my publisher's already told me, like, we've already got the audio thing sorted out. I'm gonna have to read it. So so what is it like for someone who's got no idea, right? Like people who listen to Audible or whatever, they like to get their audiobooks. I know quite a few people actually who prefer audiobooks than actually reading books these days. What's the experience like for an author to actually read
it? Firstly, it's your baby, right? So it's your books. It's great to be able to have your voice, right, to start with.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then also, yeah, for me, I'm sitting in a recording studio. So you're in a recording studio, in a booth, you know, a soundproof booth with one of those wonderful mics in front of you, a big fluffer on it, what are they called, right? And reading off an iPad. And especially since I'm reading about a natural lifestyle, right? And in the movement chapter, I'm talking about not sitting in chairs, and I'm kind of in this chair position with this, and in poor air quality, poor lighting, and, you know, it's all of it.
You're back to your dim underneath the railway tracks.
And then, but then, of course, that's the beauty of the book. It's saying we can't all live in nature, but it doesn't mean we can't live naturally. And we're trying to get those needs met in every environment. Yeah. So it's then, well, what could I do within that environment to change it? So it's changing sitting positions and, you know, and getting out when I could to just get out in the fresh air and get some natural light in and get some fresh air on board and go back in again. But you're there from 9 till 5 reading out.
Oh, wow.
And you have
and how many times do you actually stop and repeat yourself?
Well, actually, you know what?
Like, how many times do you actually go like, oh, can I do that again? Can we just re-record that one paragraph? Like, how much of that happens?
I guess it's really going to be individual specific, that Mark. Read to your kids more and more, you know, and get into the voices. Like I come out with all the characters when I'm reading books, like, blah, 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 and all that stuff. Because actually, when it comes to reading, it just really helps the intonation, at least, with the book, right? And just all the rhythm and the timing of it, I think it really helps. The more familiar you get with reading out loud anyway. And I think having kids has really helped me, even when it comes to public speaking. Just that reading out loud all of a sudden, finding your voice. Reading kids' books, brilliant. Especially if you get into characters. If you don't have kids, just have imaginary kids and read them books at night.
Read to your pets or to your plants.
Yeah, your plants. Or just get in the mirror, you know. Just don't, you know, record it for the ancestors. But I think, I think that really helps. But you're there from like 9 to 5. Individual specific, definitely. I was hugely complimented by the guy who was in the recording this because he's editing. He will be the one who's editing. He said, oh, my God, by the second day, he was like, you know, when you're out, you just stop and you go back again. He wasn't actually stopping me at any point then on the second day. And it's normally be fine. I have to say, no, hold it back there. Let's go back to the, you know, because you might be speeding up or you might have brushed over something or pronunciation might be wrong. The intonation's wrong. Yeah. It's that. And they're great for that. That's what they do. That's the point, you know, and just really surrender to they're doing their part. And that's the world of interdependence again. And you're doing your part and it's your baby, you know. So put
were you surprised by like was
into the reading of it.
Was there a passage that you were reading out loud that you found yourself to be surprised by how emotional you got or how it brought something up for you? Like, was there a passage of the book that you read, you're like, I didn't expect that to happen.
Well, I'd already been rehearsing reading out loud of my book in the bath, right?
Okay.
For a few nights. So, and the kids are like, are you on your phone in the bath? So, why would I be on my phone in the bath? No, I was reading my book. And so I knew exactly where that was going to come in. There's a story I'm weaving together in there, and I'm on a Land's End John O'Groats run. And there's a point in the run, it's like right at the end, and I'd given myself an upper ankle sprain, couldn't stand on it, couldn't walk on it, and I'm meant to be running 30 miles a day, every single day, and we're now on day 26, sprained my ankle, can't run, fully in the pain cave, at the point where questioning everything, am I going to have to quit? The kids are going, you're not going to quit, are you, Papa? All of that language coming in, and then really delving deep into the practices. Of breath and meditation and then cold and hot and just playing with the practices, of course, that I mentioned in Being More Human. But they were the go-to recovery, but not just for the body, it was really for the mind, because I had to switch my perception from being a victim and in pain, and I had to flip all of that to healing language. You know, if you fill up, you have one space, and if you fill it with negativity, and there's no room for positivity within it, well, what's the outcome of the space? So it's like, well, firstly, I have to just surrender to the what's the pain, what is it, and what are my real concerns with that? You know, is it the ego? Oh, my God, what does it look like if I don't complete this thing and I put everything on the line? You know, what's at stake, I guess, and then surrendering to those emotions. Then I let that go. And then I managed, I took day 27 out. And then I chose, then I run on the 28th, 29th, and 30th of those days. And so day 28, I managed 30 miles. On day 29, I managed 46 miles, I believe. And the final day was a 57 miler. And on that day, I'm running and I'm tripping out, because it's like when you're doing that kind of mile, it's right at the end as well, I guess, of the experience. And I've been drifting in and out of a pain cave. And I'm working with breath and all kinds of modalities. I'm really at this higher level, I believe, like this level of consciousness where you're in like almost like a deep meditation, that process. And people have that with ultras anyway. But I think when you start to really work on tempos of breath and you're tuning in even deeper into that, then, yeah, I think you operate, there's a different frequency almost that you're reaching.
And you so tap I into something, myself, yeah, you tap into something else.
And so I found myself running across a bridge, and my grandfather came in, you know, the late Charlie Rutter, my granddad, and he's running next to me at this point on my shoulder. And he was from Newcastle, and I had this terrible upbringing. Left home like the age of 15, I believe, had no money, no shoes even, just a satchel with a change of clothes in, and goes on this massive journey down south to try and find work. So he was in my ear running with me, and I'm barefoot, of course, and he was running around the streets of Newcastle barefooted as a kid. With no money, in a coal gang. They were in a coal gang, right? And they used to be branded to be in the gang. You just even imagine that, right? So he came in with this language of, you needn't think we were going to make it that easy for you, did you? And I was like, what? You know, you were just choosing 30 miles a day. You know, you're taking the easy route out. You know, you could easily be doing more than
that. Yeah.
So in other words, you know, this is what you're going to get for taking the easy route out, basically. Had to become more challenging for you to reach those layers, it felt like, for me to have that level of rite of passage, because that's what that run, the pilgrimage that run became, that's what it felt like. In that moment, I discovered that, oh my God, that's why I needed to get to that level. That's where I needed to go. And I, as he finished chewing my ear off, you know, in this new Newcastle Geordie accent, I look across and this rainbow had appeared out of the water, and that then became the name of Bo. It was like the inspiration for Bo's name, because Bo's middle name is Rain, so he's Bo Rain Riddle rather than Rainbow Riddle. I thought about Rainbow Riddle when Millie was like, "No, can't call him Rainbow Papa. No, let's call him Bo Rain." And then the other part of that story is I then turned the corner and there's this massive sign, huge sign for the Glenmorangie whiskey distillery. And that was my grandfather's whiskey that he used to drink, you know. So it's all just, you know, again, coincidences and tripping out perhaps, but also reaching higher states almost within that. That's the part that broke me. And it didn't just break me. It broke the guy who's editing. Mm. So I started breaking up behind the mic. I was kind of choking up. And then he was choking up. And I paused for a bit. And he said, "Oh, man, tell me about it." He's just, "Oh, Tony." And then David from that pair, they'd just been away just to go traveling, and they showed me, and they put a load of stories up on Insta to say, "Oh, we got your book, Tony, it's amazing." They DM'd me, and David sent a shot of him with watery eyes and said, "I've just read the story about your granddad, man, and I've just shed a tear. It's incredible. Yeah. This book's brilliant." You know, so that's,
I remember that story. I remember when you came back from your challenge and you told me that story, because It is. I think, and as soon as you started saying that, I was like, I know where you're going with that. I know where you're going. And for people who don't, you know, haven't listened yet to our previous conversation, we've got two interviews. I'll link them in the show notes below. You did do a barefoot challenge from across the UK, from the southwest southern point all the way to the most further point up in Scotland,
mainland.
Yeah, and you like to put yourself through some incredible amount of pain. You know, when you beat the world record of running through the Three Peaks and barefoot and documentary and all this stuff, there's some juicy stuff in there. One of the things that I was really keen to get you to kind of talk about, this because I told you it would feel so surreal for me to hold this book. I told you, right? Because I remember years ago, I think the first time we met was 2015 or 2016.
It feels so good, man.
It does feel good. And then for those of you going to get your hand on this copy, you can close your eyes and you can feel the cover, and it's got a little relief.
Yeah.
A little kind of like Nice little font on there.
Yeah, man.
With a foot. And Judy asked me, is that Tony's foot in the middle?
No, it's
not. Is that your footprint in the middle, or is it?
It's a it's a close kind of illustration of my foot. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That I love that. So you, and I know we talked about this in the mini expert series, but I still want to draw this out in this conversation with you. I want to take you back to what, 6 years ago, something like that, when you first started talking about your book and you went through these different iterations. People came and going, Tony, I think you've got a book in you. Tony, you should write a book. And there was someone at a retreat, I believe, like you had some journalists who came and attended one of your first kind of retreats and said, I think you should think about doing this book. What helped you go from this might be not be such a crazy idea after all? Maybe there is a book in me and maybe I should explore this. What helped you switch that?
Telling my story is the story, right? I believe. Mm. So, yeah, let's go back. Let's just go back 6 years, right? And yeah. I've just delivered a men's retreat at 42 Acres, right? Yeah. At that point, it's really connected to 42 Acres on the board, helping with the philosophy there. And it was a friend's space. And this was very different, this men's retreat, because I didn't necessarily want to, it to be about the house so much. I was going to take people out into the forest and have them building shelters. So it's men's retreat, build shelters with a survival expert, to the point where we're getting clay out of the earth and just building clay wood burners in the shelters, and we'd light them and they'd have to stay alight. So that's a rite of passage in itself, right? I then have a week of that. It's a week-long retreat. And some of those practices are in the book as well, like all the way back then, 7 years ago, I think, six years ago, of course. And we were with breath work. We were doing ice baths in their John Frieda suite they have there, the Frieda suite, with this roll-top bath in the main ensuite, doing all the men sitting around that and chanting. Oh, it's just brilliant. And then I went straight from that home. Katerina was heavily pregnant. I mean, like really heavily pregnant. So this retreat's about rite of passages, right? Rite of passage from there.
With your third daughter. She was pregnant with your third daughter, right?
And
yeah.
Katerina's, we're at home. We unschool the kids, so they're there. And I wanted the kids to be present at birth anyway. So they had this understanding what birth is and could see it through their own eyes rather than maybe the story they get passed on of like giving birth to bowling balls and watermelons. And I just wanted them to see a beautiful birth, really. And be witness to it and change their perception of birth, perhaps when they're older, or the world's perception of birth, who knows. So they were present, and Katerina created this amazing white room with like, it's just like spiritual hub of the womb, basically, we're in this space. And was going through hypnobirthing, so breathing again was in that as well, the breath and this hypnobirthing track that goes round and round. I guess sometimes as the partner, when you're not in the, you haven't been listening to that and the breath work for so long, you're a bit like, okay, enough of the tape in your head, you know? And I'm like, right, okay, definitely baby's coming right now. I'm calling the midwife. Catherine's like, yeah, you need to call the midwife right now. And midwife wasn't picking up. So then just left messages with the midwife. And then Tallulah decides to come. That's it, right? She's not holding on. She's like, phew. It's very much like her now, today, is it's boom, straight out in the world. So I had my Lion King moment with Tallulah and hold her up. Like, this is amazing. I've caught the baby. And I passed Tallulah to Katerina straight on the boob. She didn't leave the boob after that. And then within 3 days of that, I'm now back at 42 Acres, but now holding a journalist retreat. And I had journalists and influence, like a press retreat, for what was my warrior to warrior philosophy. It's essentially this. And
Because that was one of the original titles at one point you were thinking about.
In the eight.
Back in the early days, you were thinking about talking it from warrior to warrior.
Yeah, and the warrior became like the social norms of today, and the warrior was the biological norms. So it was in there.
Yes.
These templates of it. So that was in it. But when the journalists arrived, I was a bit smashed open because I've just done a men's retreat for a week and I've just caught my baby daughter. Yeah. And so it's really open for me. And quite emotional, I guess, in that stage of things, you know. So I didn't hold the retreat from the very beginning, the first night. I said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to cook you all dinner. And then we can just sit around and chat and we can discuss. And then tomorrow morning, we'll start the retreat. And it was in that moment that they were just, oh, just, we just haven't, we just, just conversation, but asking me about my story. It started with Tallulah and then it kind of went back. And it was an opportunity for me to really tell a story about what I'd what it is to be Tony Riddle at that stage, right? How I found myself there. Not, oh, here's the philosophy and this is what we're doing over the next week, this next 4 days, the structure, the timetable, or even the the factual stuff, right? This is this is Tony now. And they all said pretty much in chorus, you should write a book. So it really started there, and that's kind of the moment. And what came with that, again, was this understanding, well, it's about telling a story, right? And then I think that first podcast we did, right, the cherry almost, right, was again that opportunity to tell the story, right, and to get behind a mic. And actually, and then since then, I've always joked and said that podcasts are like therapy in a way. You get to just really have an amazing conversation, right, and just tell your story. Yeah. Are willing to ask, then it creates the space all of a sudden.
Well, I remember that, and I just want to touch upon that, because I often talk about you in that way, that I didn't realize that when you came on a podcast, I think you said maybe you did a podcast or a couple of podcasts, but it was the first time you really went to town and kind of opened up your story, which is like this amazing, and everyone listening to this, you should go back to episode number one of Tony. It feels like it was, I mean, it's crazy to think it was about 7 years ago, right, or 6 years ago, but we're sitting on the floor and you're telling me about all this crazy story about, you know, your difficult breakup, your, you know, going bust with your gym, and actually this is how you open up your book. You talk about the kind of the reinvention of Tony, the dismantling of Tony and kind of the restructuring it, right? Like that moment where you get hit by a train, like it was like a physical sound, but it was actually
metaphorical.
A perceived experience. Yeah, metaphorical, yeah. And talking about all the different experiences that you've done. And I remember loads of people like connecting and saying, hey, that story was amazing about Tony. And then you went off and shared the story and, you know, and you kept on going and you went on Rich Roll's podcast and, you know, TV, BBC, like you've done all these amazing things since then. And one thing that I wanted to touch upon again is I remember when you came to me and you were like, without having to name anyone, but like, hey, I think I've got like an in with this publisher or with this kind of publishing group. It sounds really exciting and great. And you got there and you came back. And I remember the next week we saw each other and I was like, hey, how's that going, man? And you're like, well, yeah, apparently I don't have enough followers for like the message. Like, they love the book. They love the message. They think it's amazing, but I don't have enough followers. And I remember just going like, oh, that's bullshit, man. That's terrible. Like, what does it mean about today? Blah, 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 blah. And you could have stopped there, right? You could have just been like victim mode, screw them, but you didn't. Did something happen in that moment where you felt almost like I'm gonna prove that you don't need followers to have an impact? Like, is there something that happened around that time?
Yeah, again, it goes right back to that conversation around the table with the journalist, because after that retreat, I'd organized it to go to certain people's homes, some of the journalists' homes, and I'd go into their home because it's all very well going on retreat. I like to call them experiences now, because retreat just means I'm retreating from something. It means that that's bad, this is good. And really, it's all one thing, you know. Really, it's just, well, how do I transform what it is over here that's maybe perceived that I have to retreat from? So I'd go to their home, and one of them was Andrea Charles, and she was writing for Red Magazine, did a massive 4-pager, brilliant piece. And so I'd go to her place in Brighton. I'd drop Katarina and the kids on the beach, and I'd finish with Andrea, and I'd go back to the beach and say, Katarina, I'm just gonna just check in on my emails, and then I'll switch to kiddie mode, aka flight mode. And that's it. And I open up first messages from M&A Rushton, who was at that time editor at Psychology's magazine. And she said, oh, I'm with this publisher now. And she wants to know if there's a book. So it started there, really. That was, again, back of the retreat, Andrew Charles. And it all started to move towards this language around a book. It's like everywhere I went, book, book, book. And it just started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then I put together a proposal. And I spent a bit too long probably putting together the proposal for the publisher that was on the beach on the call at that time, wanted to know if there was a book in it. But by then a literary agent walked into my life, Valeria. I've been working with Valeria ever since. You know, and it's Valeria's work. She's enabled me to those initiatives.
Yeah, she's in the acknowledgement. Like you mentioned her in your acknowledgement.
Yeah, she's in the acknowledgements in there. She's helped me show where to put the seeds and, you know, and who needs to water them, perhaps, right? So with Valeria's help, she then lined up like a number of 10 of the best publishers, right? So I was then like, woohoo! I was living between Ibiza and London. So I was in this amazing way, you know, just living this lives in a way. But,
Naked Tony.
Yeah, and at this time, it was like, wow, okay, so I fly back. I had meeting after meeting after meeting. One of them was with one publisher, and that publisher just said, this is amazing. I'm going to invite someone from marketing. She's loving your work right now. We're both just blown away and showing me all these other books, and this is how we see it. And we're just going to present it to the team. We'll get back to you in the lift with Valeria. We go down in the lift. And Valeria says, that's the best meeting I've had with so-and-so publisher in however long. Right?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Like water flight back to the ether.
Ego flight.
Kind of that thing. And the ego's off, right? And I land back in Ibiza. Yeah, luckily, Ibiza kind of has that energy to kind of bring you back down and just make more eco again, right? So I had 4 days there, but 4 days of thinking, yeah, we've done this, right? And Katerina, yeah, I think we've got this publisher and this is the reaction. And she's like, oh, it's amazing because you've done nothing but talk about a book for however long, probably. I then arrive back in London. I'm at the airport in Ibiza. And I'm just about bored. And Valeria's on the call to say, oh, have you thought about this publisher? And I was like, well, why don't I think about that publisher? Because you just didn't have a large enough platform, right? And so it's very difficult because I'd come from this mind of, wow, it's the best proposal we've seen in a while. We love the book. We love the material. Oh, it's the best meeting I've been to in a long while, perhaps the best. And yet I don't have a large enough platform. So in my head, it was like, well, is that saying that, oh, we could have a not so great platform, not so great book, but have a large number of followers? And I got my head around it by, of course, it's a business as well, right? It is a business.
Yeah, yeah. It's like a VC.
You know, and I get it. I 100% get it. And, you know, in publishing, they might have 10 authors at that moment and they have one that's going to be really, really successful, of course, right? So that one might take more energy and more marketing behind it and everything else. So I get it. And they also want for you to, you know, be successful with your book, not just they're successful with your book, you know? So there was lots to it at that time. And I did put things on hold. I actually put things on pause. I think I took a year out of that and then went, okay, if we're serious about this and we want to get the message out there. Because for me, why was I writing a book? Really, it was, I had all this understanding. I knew all these practices. And I knew how bad I was feeling back there, the days of the broken Tony and, you know, Tony 1.0 and now Tony 2.0. So I knew what it was and I knew why I needed to present it. And knew that I wanted to reach others with that message. So what do I have to do? I play the game, right? You play the game. And so part of that was I took time out to then assess, well, how do I do that? It was then, right, I need to grow my following, right? How do I do that? I have to now immerse in that. That has to be part of my coaching practice. Has to be that. It has to be more basically present on social media, but also refine things on it of how I deliver that message, right? And really that just became, oh, people are really interested in actually what you're doing, just the lifestyle. Yeah. So just put your, just do it.
Yeah.
Just put what you're doing out there, what you're being really, not doing even. It's just, oh, this is what I'm doing today.
Yeah.
And suddenly it was like this, oh, this is amazing stuff. And it just went up and up. And then from your podcast, I guess, telling a story leads to another podcast telling a story. And then it went on and then the podcast got just, I guess, you know, Rich Roll, Rangan Chatterjee, they were massive podcasts for me as well. And that meant huge following. I'd also then, you know, in amongst that, I'd taken on this Land's End John O'Groats, which created, it was considered as being socially extreme, I would say. So that meant, in that time, meant it created a huge platform. And with that platform, I could have this huge message that we could deliver. And that helped. So lots of things moving in different directions, just move towards creating that bigger platform. Can I have a look at Wi-Fi here?
Yeah, that's That's amazing, because I don't know, you know, and today I haven't looked at the latest figures, so a humble brag, just how many followers have you got now on Instagram especially?
Well, when I first looked at this and I was on the beach and we were discussing it, I think around about that time, probably when I took on the, right, this is what I'm going to do with socials, I was about 2,200. So I have 70,000 more followers than that now, I guess, you know?
72,000
followers.
Yeah. And you got the blue tick, Tony.
You've
made it in life.
You know, so all of that, is obviously in, it's kind of what people, they appear to say people in the funnel, don't they? Like you put, you know, yeah, I had all these things happening at that time. There was so much happening around with podcasts, invited on as a guest, different podcasts, lots of press. Mm. And then once you start to deliver that message, of course, and you're familiar with sharing a story, then I guess, you know, you have more invitation.
Yeah, 100%. I want to touch upon the book. How did you manage to distill your wealth of experience, right, and knowledge and passion for effectively what's about how to be more in touch and in sync with a biological norm? Like, okay, we might not be able to live in the forest or in the jungle, in the rocks or the woods or whatever, but we can certainly have more natural things, like these amazing things like screen time, sky time over screen time, you know. How did you decide what was going to stay in this? Because that must have been really painful.
Mark, so my movement chapter, when I submitted kind of my manuscript, right? What, Tony Riddle's manuscript, is this crazy man who's been working on this at this point for, because it's been 2 years since that kind of started to be refined. So 4 years prior to that of work, let's say. My movement chapter, I think, was 26,000 words, and I had to get it down to 8,000. My play chapter was similar, 24,000. Sleep was 26,000. Yeah. So there were these mammoth chapters.
Yeah.
But once I'm like the audiobook, I was late to writing. So for me, I learned to write in this process too. You know, I actually learned to write whilst writing a book, because it's been over such a lot. And I've worked with different editors and I've worked with people that have helped me write, you know? And help me structure it. So I've handed over, like, with my editor, it's like, oh, here's 28,000 words. And they've been going, right, removed all the repetition anyway. Like, once you remove, like, the repetition, some of the waffle that's not necessary, just because I'm not a pro writer, right? That comes with being a pro.
I get
an amateur writer, in a way, learning as I'm going. And once you take a lot of that out, so that helped. And then it was... Penguin Life have been amazing, because at the very beginning they just said, oh, this is incredible, we're introducing the reader to even a new vocabulary here, right? Some of your stuff's just, no one's seen this before, it's like, it's just incredible. That's, we want to keep that. And initially the book proposal was very much a guide, it was going to be a guide, Mark, so it would have been like much more of the practical steps. And my editor, who was like helping me kind of strip out all this stuff, he just said, Mark. So Mark then just said, I don't think we really understand what we have on our hands here. I need to kind of, we're going to do a new proposal together and we're going to hand it in so that I can get your philosophy down. And then you can have the steps. And that's the original proposal all those years back that I handed in. We shaped it to be more like a guide because it was more attractive that way, because that's what was going out.
It was more marketable.
So Penguin Life, thank you, amazing. They then said, okay, let's do this. Let's do a book where your philosophy's in there, but we're still going to give people a number of steps. And that's what we birthed, basically. So that's what's enabled me to keep the message in there and the integrity in there, because it's a nice blend of philosophy, understanding how it looks in nature versus how, where we're at now, and then steps to get there. You know, it's quite an unusual. And what Katerina, because imagine for Katerina, she's been around listening to this for long enough to the point she's probably a bit like this one. La, 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 la. Here he goes again. Yeah. Be more human. If he says that one more time, you know, can you imagine? Yeah. Not expressing it, but it would, you know.
No, no, I get
it. And it was my baby at that point. Right? So she then suddenly now Katerina has this book, right? And she piled through it. She went, oh my God. He said, it's just amazing. The breathing and being, I totally get it. You are breathing and being in that chapter. It's like, and how do you manage to keep that? It's just your humor's in there. How do you manage to keep the humor? Like,
yeah.
And then the movement and play, so you can very much tell that's really you, and there's so much in there. And then and sleep, so much around science around sleep. So as you said, you just put together an amazing book there. And that was to hear that from Katerina, my wife, was really quite something, right? You know.
I think it's an amazing book. You know, I'll be full transparent with everybody. I haven't had time to finish it because I only got a copy of it a few days ago, but I had start piling through. And one of the things I love seeing was like some of the exercise that back in the day, used to take me through, right? Like with the toe exercise and like, you've got some little, I had them a second ago, but I want to show them, but you had like, you know, pictures of foot and like this. I remember when you showed me this, like, look at your foot, draw your foot on the piece of paper.
Yeah.
Now draw your shoe and see how that foot does not fit in that paper, right?
There we go. This one.
One of the last. Oh, you got it. There you go. For people watching it on YouTube, you can see it. Yeah. That's what I love. They're not even like the toe exercises. Oh, there you go. I've got it. My turn. It's like this one with the toe exercise. I remember when you used to make me do these kind of stuff, and I was like, oh, this is so painful, but I miss it actually.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about the question It's like, what's your intention with this book? What's your hope with this book? Now that this book is about to hit the world, people can get their hands on their copy as of by the point this podcast comes out.
26th of May. What's your wish? 26th of May. So I imagine when this comes out, it's already there, right?
Yeah, it'll be out, yeah.
What's the intention? Well, the intention was set way back there.
Right? Yeah, like...
You know, I was in a ceremony getting these kind of downloads of stuff that was coming in around social norms and biological norms. You know, I'm a father to four, right? So there's that's inclusive within the book. There's this whole conversation, not just around personal health, but planetary health as well, right? So it's about biodiversity. And it's about all of us understanding that there are ways of living that are more in sync with our human biology, but are also better for the human, but better for the planet in that sense, right? So there's that. Yeah. There's that message in there. There's the link then to Indigenous cultures, because, if 4 to 5% of the world population are Indigenous, yet look after 80% of the world's biodiversity, we have to be listening there. So there's a part in there that I wanted to amplify that message, or they even enable
awareness.
The awareness. Mm. And so to steer people to that, because again, before I started raising funds on one of the last runs for Survival International that are fighting the fight for Indigenous people around the world, people were like, oh my God, I had no idea this was going on in the world, right? Because we don't. Mm. We just have our linear streets where we go protesting in. But actually, what's going on outside, you know, what's still happening to certain cultures around the world. So that was in there. Then there was this, what came in for me, what I was explaining earlier, is that I had my breakthrough, right? I lost the business. I went bankrupt. I was at rock bottom. And yet I knew so much, really. You know, it was in there. I just had to start living it and being it, right? And that's largely what these practices are about. The breathing and being chapter, and the sleeping and resting chapter, and the eating and drinking chapter, and the indoor and outdoor living, they're the things that really game changed for me. The movement and play, I was a coach already in it, and I knew it, you know. But those other practices for me completely transformed my life. Right? And so there's that message. It's really, if we don't have access to it, or I have that knowledge, and what I do is keep it to myself. I want to get that out to as many people as possible. Now, a book enables us to do that. Social media enables us to do that, right? If you can get out there. That model's changing somewhat, right? So I just felt, what about those people who don't have that knowledge, haven't tuned into that wisdom perhaps that's coming in? And how can I help those? And that's really the message. Yeah. So it's
Make it more accessible.
Make it more accessible, 100%. Also, again, it comes to awareness, doesn't it? Like awareness for Indigenous cultures, awareness for the environment, and awareness for that personal and planetary health. It's all there. And I feel I've done that with this book. I honestly feel that.
Yes.
The message is there.
Well, there's a part of the book I feel like for every Tony 1.0 out there who might feel like they're not living in congruent with their, you know, truth, that they feel like they're a bit of a fraud. Because you talk about this, like you were shredded, like you could be on a cover magazine, but inside you were just broken, you know? And so how many people can relate to that, to this idea that we know there's probably more, we're not probably living, you know, a true authentic life. And I feel like this book is one way to access that and tap into that. One of the questions I wanted to ask you if we go is, in 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what's something completely crazy that your book has enabled you to do, or something happened from the back of your book that you could have never expected? Like, what's a wild, crazy thing that you could go, Mark, if this happens, then there's something crazy about the world? Like, what would be something insane that could happen on the back of this book being out in the world?
Oh, on the back of the book, I think to put expectations on what I'd want it to be in 5 years, or where it would be in 10 years, or something that crazy would come from it. I almost don't want anything crazy.
Well, this is not about expectation. This is not about expectation. It's not about expectation. Like, oh, I'd hope. It's more like, I'll give you an example, right?
Yeah.
So my book's coming out in September. If I had to think about something I would have never expected, it's like Obama sent me a DM, right? On Instagram, or sent me a Twitter message saying, hey, I just picked your book and I just want to let you know I really enjoyed it. Like, that would be a crazy, like, it'd be like, what? You know, something like that. So there's just something because I'd like to go back in time. Like, in 5-10 years, we come back to this conversation and listen to what you said and see how far is the bar. Like, how?
Because I already have stuff. There's already really stuff I'm packing right now. Like, I'll be on Chris Evans next Monday on Virgin Radio in the morning, right?
At
9:30 in the morning. That's going to be huge. It's already huge for me to think my book's in Waterstones. It's massive for me because...
Yeah, that is so cool.
You know, because, again, I was late to write, late to read. So it's just massive to even have that, to just live in that and experience that right now.
Yeah.
I just feel like I'm already having these amazing experiences, and already having these amazing opportunities.
Cool.
They're already coming up, you know. And I think the intention of the book is what the intention is. I perhaps maybe would like to, through that process, work maybe closer to those organizations that are fighting the fight for those Indigenous cultures, maybe. You know, those bigger organizations, and have a voice within that, be invited into that, perhaps, because the book's enabled that, you know?
Yeah.
And then I'd have to question, why wouldn't I do that without a book? You know what I mean? I guess that's...
Yeah. Well, it opens doors. It gives you more exposure. It opens doors. Like, there's a lot of awareness from the back of the book that you can do, which can do some good work, like, for sure. Someone listening to this who's like, okay, Tony, I think I'm ready to get this book, but I'm not 100% sure, is it really for me? Like, I mean, I work in the city, you know, I'm not really like into this whole nature barefoot thing at this moment. What do you want to tell them at this point now, like, about what you want for them?
There's case studies in here, like clients that I've worked with, of course, and there's people in their like late 70s and now early 80s in this book that just wanted to simply learn how to walk. And from that, then climbs Mount Everest Base Camp for their 50th anniversary, Mount Kenya, Atlas, Bhutan, were terrified of the cold, actually had trauma around the cold, did breathwork with me, took them through an experience called Move, Breathe, Chill, that's with our friend Arthur. And then has been going to Hampstead Ponds and the River Lee 5 times a week for the last 2 years, right? That's in their late 70s, right? So that, for all of us, is such a profound message, right? That it's never too late for a start, right? It's never too late. Then there's stories in there around the, you know, the entrepreneur killing it and sipping on a coffee in the morning to get going. Simple mechanisms within that just changed. And again, we want to be killing it, really, alert, thriving, all those messages, but not killing ourselves in the process, right? You know, because there's also longevity in this conversation. Entrepreneur, whatever you want to be, there's longevity in that. And if you don't address these things, well, unfortunately, we have burnout. I've had the burnout. I know what it's like, right? It's not a nice situation, especially when you have a young family like I did at that time. It was essential for my growth. But hopefully, the idea is I had to go through that so others wouldn't have to. And that's part of what this story is.
Right? Yeah.
And so, when I was back there, I probably could just, whatever. I'm indestructible, right? That's probably what I was thinking at the time. Because I had the body of someone on the cover of Men's Health, but it proved different, you know. So I think it's for everyone, that message, you know. And you don't have to take this book on, that's the point, and read it from front to back and try and do it all. Because actually, you know what? When we're up against it, to try and do all of this stuff at once is just massive overwhelm, and you'll have a huge emotional reaction to it. And that will then create more stress. So I would just take chapter by chapter and work on the steps and do them over time.
It could be play with it.
This month, breathing and being. Let's just take on some breathing modalities, because if I breathe differently, it will change my perception of the world and it will change my relationship with myself and others. And that includes the work, perhaps the environment, or what it is you're trying to be killing it in. It will change it. And then you could say, right, movement next, or sleep next. And then you could even go back and start again and find nuances within it. And that's the beauty of the work. Once you start, it's transformative.
Yeah. I appreciate it, brother. Before I let you go, I want to acknowledge you for your book. It is a truly inspiring story of, especially that I've witnessed from being that rejection that you got years ago, the inception idea, the different titles, iterations, the going through all the different challenges, the everything. And what an honor it is to receive an early copy. I just genuinely want to say that. I don't take that for granted. Next time I see you, I'm 100% getting this signed, just so you know. And I know just how much this is going to help people. Even if, you know, as you were saying that, like, if you try and implement everything, it's going to be overwhelming. I would say, like, just even if you implemented 10% of what you actually suggest in this, could make a drastic change in people's lives and how they feel and how they connect to themselves and others. And from that place, they can then add on more, but almost go with the intention of, like, hey, there might be one thing that you can pick up that's going to be really beneficial for you. So it's a beautiful book. It's well-designed. Congratulations to you and the whole team, to Katarina and the whole family, to the Riddle. I miss you guys. And I've got one last question for you, actually. And I've asked you twice already, what does being unconventional mean to you? So I'm going to ask you a different question. And you're going to be the first guest to ask a different question because I've asked you all those two. What does being human mean to you?
Oh, what does it mean to be human? It means for me the ultimate expression of what the universe has uniquely assigned for me that couldn't be expressed through the voice of another or the behavior even of another.
Yeah. Where can people find a copy of the book if they want to find out more about you, follow you, buy your book? What's the best place to go to?
You can head to tonyriddle.com.
Instagram
at the Natural Lifestylist. I'd head there, really, at a Natural Lifestylist, and then of course just Google search Be More Human Tony Riddle, and it's there. Head there, you know, Tony Riddle.
Amazing.
It always surprises me now, Mark.
Congratulations.
I have friends that say that, like, oh my god, I run a Google search on you every day, it's incredible the amount of stuff that comes up. I'm not what does Tony Riddle eat? It's fascinating.
The one I'm always surprised about is, like, if I Google my name for something, it's like, what is Mark Drew's net worth? It's like, who cares? Like, I don't know why that comes up as, like, one of the top Google searches. I'm like, that is such a random one. Anyway, Tony, be well. Good luck with the whole
book launch.
Everybody go and get your hands a copy. Love you, brother. Miss you. And let's catch up soon.
Love you, man. Speak soon.
There you have it, folks. I hope you enjoyed today's conversation as much as I did. Always a pleasure to hang out with my good friend Tony. Grab yourself a copy of this book. It's out now. it's going to be a blockbuster and it's going to be a game changer. I know for a fact that if you even implement 5 to 10% of what Tony shares in his book, you will feel a significant difference in your life and feel more in tune, more connected, more grounded, which we can all do a little bit more of. So if you enjoyed today's conversation, let me know over by sharing the comments, sharing your comment in the comments below. And please do leave a rating and review over an Apple Podcast. And of course, if you're inspired by these conversations and you want to get your message out there and you want to raise more awareness about the causes you're serving, the products you're delivering, or services that you're sharing, go over to www.miniexpertseries.com to get some really practical insights and a game plan on how to implement some of these tools so that you can raise your profile in a way that feels congruent to your values and get insights from some of the world's most exciting experts. I'll see you in there. I can't wait. Until next time, remember, you matter and your message matters. See you soon.